This is Morning Air.
This is about educating a people that for 40 years haven't been given the full truth. It's time now to speak the truth.
When you do things to the best of your ability, keeping Jesus number one and doing everything you possibly can for His glory, that's a winner.
You are called to make the light of Christ shine brightly in the world.
Bringing the light of Christ to start your day.
This is Morning Air with John Morales on Relevant Radio.
Good morning. Thanks so much for joining us for Morning Air. It's Glenn Leverins in for John today. Great hour lined up for you. The recent motu proprio from Pope Francis got a lot of people thinking harder about the Latin Mass. We're going to talk to the mom of a family that recently got into that and what they enjoy about that. We'll learn more about the Latin Mass coming up. All the latest news from Ashley and Rona live from Rome. A new story corner on the way. And first portion of the hour, we invite you to stick around and learn more about some of the keys for a healthy and happy marriage. Realizing saying, I do, should happen more than once. Kate Wicker joins us to talk about that. Good morning, Kate. How are you doing today?
I'm doing well. How are you?
Doing great, doing great. Before we kind of dive into that good advice on marriage, kids, even adults, kind of like, oh man, this August, school will be starting soon with all those kids. What's it like in the Wicker household right about now?
Yeah, so I live in the South, so I've already had two children start. My high schoolers don't start till next week. But yeah, it's been a little crazy, especially with everything going on down here. So we're just praying that we have a great year and a safe year. And, you know, mom's going to finally have a little bit of quiet time, hopefully, because last year was the first year that I sent my youngest, and then everything shut down. And then my oldest turned 17 in a few months. So it had been about 17 years. And I also homeschooled for a few years. So I was really kind of looking forward to a few quiet mornings there. So hopefully we'll get there next week.
So that sound we hear in the background is actually moms quietly cheering all across the country here as the little ones hop on that school bus. Well, we're glad you're along today to talk about one great thing for kids, and that's having a great example of mom and dad loving one another to keep that marriage strong. And this is kind of motivated by an anniversary that you've noted, huh?
Yeah, so my mom and dad, they will be celebrating 50 years in August, later this month. And what you just said rings so true to me. One of the best gifts, or probably the best other than passing along their faith, has been the gift of a good marriage and teaching me what that looks like. And they've had many other people tell them, we have a loved one who didn't grow up in the happiest marriage. And so they have always told my parents that they've been the model for them as well. Once they got married, to have a good, happy marriage. And it is such a gift because I always had that sort of comfort and security, when things got, you know, rocky in other ways in life, and just showing that they put each other first. Now, that isn't to say mom and dad never got into fights or things like that. And that's the similar with my own marriage. But what's so important is to show each other grace and to apologize when things get rough, and to show your children. I like to think of it not just an I do at the altar. It's a daily I do. And sometimes you have to choose, I do love this person even though they're driving me crazy, or I do choose to love this person even though we're going through a rough patch right now. And that was hard for me initially. I'm a hopeless romantic, and I just kind of thought I would always be the lovesick teenager. And certainly I feel like that sometimes, but sometimes I feel more like an angry, annoyed adult, cynical adult. And so I have to make that choice to put my marriage first and to love my husband despite his imperfections. He's very, very good at loving me unconditionally, and that has been such a gift for me.
As we get into a few tips here on great ways to keep a marriage happy and healthy with Kate Wicker, one of the first ones on the list is something that generated something called saucepan tennis in our house. I was cleaning up after supper one night, and a little easier to do this, I guess, as empty nesters. But we had some tin foil, and I tossed it in my wife's direction, and she'd picked up a relatively clean pan and kind of hit it back to me. And we kept that going for a while, playing saucepan tennis with a ball of tin foil in a pan after supper one night. And so part of it, keeping a sense of humor, right? That's very important.
Yeah, one thing I'll never forget again with my own parents, my mom had a pretty severe, pretty serious brain surgery. And I was there when she woke up and she was in a lot of pain. And my dad, I can't even remember at the time what he said, but you could tell he was extremely worried. And but he cracked a joke. And my mom started to laugh, and then she kind of swatted at him and said, "Don't make me laugh, it hurts." And, you know, I started to laugh then, and because we were all scared. And but my dad just knew that what we all needed right then is a little bit of laughter. And so I think that's so important. We can take ourselves too seriously sometimes. I one of my favorite stories, which I just, for some reason, sticks out to me. I remember when my husband and I will be celebrating 20 years in May, but when it was around our 6th wedding anniversary and our kids were still quite little, and we couldn't get away from everybody. So we decided to take a little weekend trip. And being, again, the hopeless romantic, I just pictured the kids going to bed early and my husband and I being able to sip wine and gaze at the ocean. We, you know, were able to drive to the ocean. And no, it's like the baby boycotted sleep. One of my children, who had been struggling with not wanting to go number two on the potty, all had been doing much better. And then all of a sudden decided to be constipated and in pain the whole weekend. And it was just ridiculous. And I remember on the way home, the kids were crying and I looked at my husband. I said, "Well, aren't you all refreshed and ready to start your work week?" And we just started laughing because, I mean, if we didn't laugh over the insanity of it, we would have started crying or screaming at the kids. So I think it's so important to just take a step back and know that sometimes life is really, really hard. But if you can keep that sense of humor and then, of course, keep the faith that this too shall pass, that you'll get through it together and you'll come out stronger on the other end.
Well, I hardly agree about that, keeping that sense of humor. And just a couple quick notes on that. And it seems to be popular in our type of humor in society right now. That's sarcasm. Do not go there as far as humor between one another. And also probably good to note, no kind of public teasing too hard at all of the other. You know, if you're out with other people and you have a little bit of a complaint you want to turn into poking fun at your spouse, that never works well.
That is such good advice. I'll never forget when we moved to a new neighborhood once and a couple asked us out to go to dinner. And needless to say, we didn't end up going out with them again because I remember one of the spouses was ribbing the other one quite a bit and to the point where the other one, you could tell, was starting to feel uncomfortable. And then that made my husband and I feel comfortable. And so I totally agree with that. Another lesson that I've learned is, you know, if you are collecting grievances, which sometimes we do, find yourself one trusted girlfriend who you know is going to love your husband and knows you have a good marriage no matter what. And don't air your grievances, certainly not on social media. Try not to with your parents, you know, because you're going to get through that storm or that mild annoyance, but the people who love you may not forget. And so they might build up this sort of wall of resentment against your spouse. So if you can at all, just work it out with your spouse. But if you need to talk to someone, if it's not to the point where you need to talk to a spiritual director or a counselor or anything, then just find one trusted person that you know isn't going to hold it against your spouse. And I would want the same. I mean, that's one thing. I don't think I've ever heard my husband complain. He's just, and I have to admit, there have been a few times when I've like rolled my eyes in front of my kids or I haven't been as good about keeping if I'm in a bad mood or something has annoyed me. And he just doesn't do that. And that's just such a beautiful, respectful thing that really builds me up and builds our marriage up.
And we really got away when we're complaining about our spouse right to another. We don't want to discolor them in the eyes of, say, one's parents, so that their son-in-law or daughter-in-law, they look at differently forever, try to avoid that as well. Kate Wicker with us this morning for this portion of Morning Air on Relevant Radio, looking for some great tips at a long and happy marriage. And another one, and this is something that takes a little work, but it's so worth it, and it can be done. That's forgiving each other's humans' wrongs and failures.
Yeah, and sometimes it's a big forgiveness, and sometimes I like to say it's like the little things that start to add up. And one analogy, an example I've always used is my husband. He'll unload the dishwasher, as will all my children, and I am very particular about where I put things, and the children and my husband seem to not have that same attention to detail when it comes to unloading the dishwasher. And I remember one day I was just getting very angry because I couldn't find the colander. And I said something to Dave. I said, "Oh, you always put the colander in a different spot." And again, he was great with using, maybe this was a little bit of sarcasm, but he said, "Well, I'm just trying to keep you on your toes and keep things interesting." And I did luckily chuckle. And then I realized, you know, he was coming home after a long day of work and seeing something that needed to be done and did it. And did I really need to complain if it took me a little bit longer to find the colander? No. And so sometimes it's those little forgiveness. And then sometimes it's big. I haven't had anything like that. But I remember I used to write a Marriage Matters column a long time ago for a Catholic publication. And some of the stories were just so beautiful, like forgiving someone for alcoholism and some of the things that had happened. And then once they became recovered, forgiving someone for infidelity, these big opening their heart and using God's mercy and giving that to their spouse, not becoming a doormat, you know, certainly expecting there to be remorse and some changes, but also truly being able to let go of the bitterness and the resentment. That's just a beautiful thing. And that's when you know that those graces that we receive in the sacrament of marriage can really be poured down on us. And if we're open to them, can be revealed in the hardest moments and help us to not harden our heart towards our spouse.
That's such a good point, that forgiveness is possible, and you can both move on and love. And I tell you, I wanted to add to the dishwasher conversation, but I also don't want to publicly criticize my spouse, and so I'll just remain quiet on that point as we continue with tips for a happy and healthy marriage with Kate Wicker here.
That's true. I just threw my children and my husband under the bus for not putting things back. Sorry, guys.
Oh, maybe they're still sleeping. All right. But, boy, another thing to recognize, despite many, many decades of wedded bliss, I have just recently heard this this saying, I don't know, last year or two, but how, you know, marriage isn't always 50-50. I mean, sometimes it's 90-10. Sometimes it's 10 and 90, but we need to recognize that marriage has its ups and downs in different stages, and, you know, that's kind of the way it can be, and we can get through that.
Yes, that's another excellent point that I've definitely seen in my parents. You know, growing up, my dad had a very demanding job, and my mom was definitely the caretaker who took care. He traveled a lot, and so she just took care of a lot of the domestic duties. Well, her health has failed her, and she's doing okay, but in recent years where she's had had to take a step back, and my dad now is the one who cooks and cleans and does a lot of the things that my mom had done. And so it's been beautiful to see how that, like you said, that it's not always 50-50. Things have sort of shifted and different people have been caretakers in different ways and in different seasons. And you just can't predict how it's going to unfold. So you have to be prepared to, as cliche as it sounds, to love until it hurts, and to know that love isn't always about how you're feeling. It's about how you're making the other person feel. And I think that's something that you can only really learn once you're in the trenches. Like, you can talk about it to pre-Cana, people are participating and preparing for marriage, but I know that I couldn't really learn it until I was in the trenches of marriage.
Are we afraid sometimes as newlyweds to have that first real argument? Sometimes people who don't love conflict, not that we should all love conflict, but if we don't honestly address things, sometimes, you know, we'll hit that bump and it might be a little bigger if we don't address it for a while. And then we're like, oh no, we need to realize there will be those ups and downs, but addressing things will smooth those out a bit.
Yeah, definitely. I know that I was guilty of in the beginning and early in marriage that if something bothered me because I wanted this idyllic, beautiful, hopeless romantic kind of marriage, I would kind of bury it and try and, you know, just get through it. But then I would end up being sort of the martyr, or I would sulk, or, and my poor husband half the time wouldn't even know what I was upset about and had forgotten about it, you know? So, talking about it and not, once you do work things out, not digging up, you know, old things again and again and again and rehashing them, unless it's something big that you didn't really address, but you need to forgive and then move on. And so, you know, that's another thing that I've definitely tried not to do, is if something is bothering me or if I have hurt feelings or anything like that, just to say, you know, hey, I need you to do this, or this is what hurt me. And this is another kind of cliche thing. I think sometimes as women, and this might not be true for all women, but we kind of think that the men in our lives understand and get things. And sometimes you just have to point blank tell them, like, I need you to tell me I'm beautiful more often, or I need you to help out with this, with the kids, or things like that. 'Cause sometimes it won't naturally happen. And it's not because the person doesn't love you, but it's because they think you already know that they think you're beautiful, or they think you're strong and you've got everything covered. So I've definitely learned to, instead of resenting not getting help, to ask for help and to say, listen, I'm struggling here and I need your help with this. And my husband is always more than willing to step up to the plate, but sometimes he just doesn't know. And it's not because he is ignoring me. It's because he does see me as this strong, beautiful, capable woman. So I think that's another thing that's helped me in my marriage.
And maybe, Kate, a plea on behalf of all guys, if we're not reading your mind correctly that day, please say something out loud that's bothering you, and don't get mad at us preemptively.
Yes. But, yes.
See, one of the things, Kate, that really, it's hard for like good Christian parents who want to really take care of the kids and put so much focus on the kids, is that realizing the best thing for the kids is to put the marriage first. And that's a hard lesson sometimes for us to learn.
It is. And again, not to, make drastic assumptions, but I have seen a lot of women, once they become mothers, to rightfully so pour themselves into their children. But they so unctuously overgive that they neglect other relationships in their life, including their marriage. Sometimes their prayer life, they forget that first and foremost, before a mother, they're a beloved daughter of God. And then they're also, if they're not a single mother, they are a wife, and they have these other really important roles that need nurturing to grow. And I think it's very important that we make time for our marriage. And again, that is such a gift. Like, my kids will kind of roll their eyes when my husband comes home or I come home and one of us has been gone for a bit, and we give each other a big hug, and he might like dramatically, he's not a big public display of affection, but in the home we like to annoy the children. So he'll like, you know, bow me and give me a kiss down, and the kids will be like, oh, gross. But I know they're all secretly like, oh, daddy thinks you're a princess, or, you know, whatever. And so I think that's really important for our children to see that we are putting each other first. And, you know, these last 18 months have been kind of crazy, so obviously we weren't going on all these dates or anything, but we still, my kids know that they're, when we have an at-home date night too, even the older ones who, you know, an almost 17-year-old who, of course, during the summer doesn't need to go to bed at 9, we'll tell her to go read, you know, up in bed for one or two nights a week so we can have some adult time and some boundaries. Just to talk and spend time with each other. And that's important for our children to see that. I remember another couple when I was in a church Bible study that had been married for a long time saying something that I haven't actually done in my marriage as of yet, but if I ever felt like we needed to, I thought it was so cool. She said that every day when her husband got home from work, that he would say hello briefly to the kids, and then he and the wife would immediately go into the bedroom, lock the door, and have 10 minutes just to talk to each other. Sometimes she said they would pray, but they would have that, and the kids just knew because that was the habit that they cultivated. So that was their little way during the times when they couldn't plan dates, they didn't have the money or the time or the resources, they would still make that commitment to each other and show the children that, you know, they needed time together and this came first.
Kate Worker joining us, inspired by coming up on the 50th anniversary of her folks' wedding. Some great wedding tips, keeping that marriage strong. Just about a minute only left, Kate, but the last question, certainly not the least on the list of great ways to keep your marriage strong, is never underestimate the power of prayer and the sacraments.
Yeah, one thing that I learned pretty early on in my marriage is that we are both on our own individual spiritual journeys. I kind of thought, since we were so in sync with everything else, that we would always just feel, after we celebrated the sacrament of marriage, we would just feel this rush of, you know, God's love and just forge on together, you know, making each other become these saints together. And certainly I think that pruning and all of that is happening, but our spiritual journey has, my husband and mine, has been very different, and he has taken a different path now. And for the longest time, I would sort of despair and get really upset. And then I realized that I can't ever give up on my husband or my marriage, but I do sometimes have to give them up to God, and to know that I have these beautiful sacraments. Adoration has been such a gift. I have spent many a times, actually when I was preparing for the sacrament of marriage, I prayed in adoration. Because I went to a very rigorous boot camp, marital pre-Cana boot camp, that said that if you don't doubt your marriage, then you're not taking it seriously enough. So I cried and I cried and I cried in adoration, and God said, just love him. And I felt this profound sense of peace. So go to the sacraments, pray and love each other and love God, and you got this.
Oh, Kate Worker, thank you so much for the good advice today on marriage, and blessings on your marriage, and getting that little whoop of celebration as the kids all head off to school this year as well.
Yeah.
Look forward to talking to you again soon. very good. Watch out. That's the one there. You got it. It's not the teen, it's the mom. All right, Kate, talk to you again soon. Morning Air continues. We talked Latin Mass with Kim Morgan coming up, and right around the corner, the latest from Rome as Ashley Nerona joins us here on Relevant Radio and on the Relevant Radio app.
Buonasera, signorina, buonasera. It is time to say goodnight to Napoli.
Good morning. Morning Air continues here. Glenda for John on Relevant Radio. Kim Morgan coming up talking Latin Mass. Our story corner for the day on the way as well, but this music might give you a little clue. It's time for our regular update from Rome with Relevant Radio Rome correspondent Ashley Nerona. Good morning, Ashley. Great to have you along today.
Buongiorno, Glenn. It is wonderful to be here, and thank you for that lovely musical greeting, too.
Oh, I do what I can. I do what I can by allowing Mariano to play what he thinks is best, and so that all works out pretty well together. Lots of things going on in Rome today, not the least of which the Holy Father's weekly general audience.
That's right. In fact, today Pope Francis continued his catechesis on the letter to the Galatians. He focused on Galatians chapter 3, verses 19, 20, and 21. And the audience was held within the Paul VI audience hall again. So again, during this hot August month, this gives all of the visitors, the participants, an opportunity to be shielded from that hot sun. So today Pope Francis brought up St. Paul's question, why the law? And that question was posed to the Gentiles, to the non-Jewish Christians, wondering if they had to follow the precepts of the Mosaic law. Now, Pope Francis said this was something the apostles had already decided against at the First Council of Jerusalem. He pointed to Acts 15, and Pope Francis went on to say that several times, especially in the prophetic books, it's noted that not observing the precepts of the law constituted what he called a real betrayal of the covenant, provoking God's wrath. Pope Francis said the apostle Paul then explains to the Galatians that in reality, the covenant and the law are not linked indissolubly. He said that St. Paul noted that the covenant is grounded on faith in the fulfillment of the promise. And Pope Francis went on to say that St. Paul was not opposed to the Mosaic Law. He often defended its divine origin and its well-defined role in the history of salvation in several of his letters. But according to Pope Francis, the law does not give life. It doesn't offer the fulfillment of the promise because it's not capable of being able to fulfill it, he said. So he went on to say that those who seek life need to look to the promise and to its fulfillment in Christ alone. And he also urged all to welcome what he called the radical newness of the Christian life. Now, today at the papal audience, Glenn, Pope Francis went on to speak about the very sad situation in France, the murder on August 9th of the French priest, Father Olivier Marie, and Pope Francis extended his condolences today. He extended them to the priest's family, to, of course, the parish community, and to all Catholics in France. And Father Olivier was a 61-year-old priest. He was, in fact, the provincial superior of the Montfort missionaries. So this is in western France. And the suspect is a man by the name of Emmanuel Abasegna. He's a 40-year-old man from Rwanda. And he has admitted to the crime. He's also suspected of starting the fire in the Nantes Cathedral in July of 2020. Interestingly, it's also believed that the Pope greeted Abasegna in 2016 during a gathering in Paul VI Hall, that same audience hall that I just mentioned in Rome, during a gathering for the European Fraternity of Joy and Mercy. And so today, Pope Francis specifically extended his condolences to the religious community, to the Montfortian religious community in Saint Laurent, and also to the family of the priest, to all the Catholics in France. And he wanted to just assure them of his sympathy and of his spiritual closeness at this time. And he also imparted his blessing, Glenn.
Now, Ashley, was that seen as just an isolated incident, even though he himself seems to have had a bit of history with the church?
Right. So this man was actually apparently staying within the community at that time. So it sounds as though, we're still waiting for the details to come out, but it sounds as though it was someone who the community had reached out in charity to and probably understood that this man needed some kind of help and guidance. And so, the police are continuing to investigate and trying to determine any causes. That is completely unknown right now. So we shall see as all this continues to unfold.
Well, sadly, violence and threats of violence can go all the way up the chain of clergy to Pope Francis and the Italian mail service intercepting some death threats.
That's right, Glenn. Yes, in fact, there's a major investigation underway right now in the Lombardy region of Italy after an envelope that was addressed to Pope Francis was discovered in a postal office. It contained three bullets. Now, this was found in an area called Peschiera Borromeo. It's in the Milan periphery. And the manager in charge found it. He's a 57-year-old Italian man. He saw the envelope. He just felt that something was wrong. Why? Because he felt something hard to the touch in the envelope. He saw the destination address was the Pope, and also that it was addressed in pen and barely legible handwriting. He felt something was wrong, and he called emergency services. So what was found were three 9-millimeter caliber Flaubert-type bullets. They were in paper wrappers. Also, there was a computer-written message in broken Italian, and that message was referring to a mysterious banking transaction. The information, the details of it have not been released. So there was also a receipt for an unknown 10-euro payment or deposit inside of that envelope. So at this point, the Carabinieri, our armed military police here, have managed to identify who they believe to be the culprit. They did this after carrying out all kinds of surveys on the envelope, on the handwriting. And they claim that this is someone who's already known to the Vatican gendarmes, the Vatican police, who in the past has already sent letters to Pope Francis. And so they right now are in the process of tracking this man's whereabouts. So we will certainly continue to follow this story as it unfolds, Glenn.
Getting the latest from Rome with Ashley Nerona this morning on Morning Air here on Relevant Radio. Mornings, Ashley, are tough enough without a volcano exploding.
That's right, exactly. That's one way to get up in the morning. You don't need an alarm clock in Sicily when Mount Etna erupts. So this happened on the 9th of August at 4 a.m., just before dawn. Imagine that the walls and floors of nearby buildings in the Catania area just were shaking. So Mount Etna, of course, it's an active volcano there in Sicily between Messina and Catania. It's actually one of the tallest active volcanoes in all of Europe. It's about 11,000 feet high, which makes it the tallest peak in Italy south of the Alps. And it's by far the largest of the three active volcanoes in Italy because it's about 2.5 times the height of Mount Vesuvius. It's one of the world's most active volcanoes in almost a constant state of activity. And despite the interesting conditions and threats that the volcano poses, there's also wonderful gifts because, of course, the people in that area manage to enjoy the fertile volcanic soils, and that supports extensive agriculture, a wonderful vineyards there, orchards. And of course, this is all across the lower slopes of the volcano itself. In fact, Mount Etna is even on the UNESCO World Heritage Site list. So what happened then at 4 a.m. on the 9th was that what was called an explosion and bits of tufa rock and ash, that volcanic rock and ash, they just went in every direction all over, especially the town of Catania. Some of the pieces were so big, they were larger than a 2 euro coin. That's our largest coin that we have here. So what's happening now is a major cleanup process that involves big professional grade blowing machines. It involves lots of sweeping and trying to remove these pieces from all over the city. So by the grace of God, there were no reports of injuries, no structural damage, just some slight delays and lots of rock and ash to clean up, Glenn.
Wow, my goodness. Well, our prayers for all those to continue to stay safe in that area while, those of us many miles away from volcanoes think, wow, that looks kind of cool. But it, of course, right? Can be very dangerous as well. Now, Ashley, we know you're a broadcast pro, so in the next 60 seconds, all we have left, if you could give us a little bit on not one but two different feasts for St. Lawrence and St. Clair.
Yeah, so yesterday, the Feast of St. Lawrence, all of us Italians, we went stargazing, and that's because it's this time of year when we enjoy in the sky the Perseids meteor shower, and so there's an old Italian tradition that those meteors, as they burn out through the sky, that they are often called the Tears of St. Lawrence, so representing the falling, burning tears of that great saint who, of course, was burnt alive on a gridiron for his faith. And the idea is that the meteor shower is representative also of the cold that killed St. Lawrence. So we're looking to the skies to remember that great saint. And then today on the Feast of St. Clair, there are Poor Clair monasteries all over the country who are doing all kinds of special events, including last night a candlelight procession to remember this great saint. There's a novena that's been going on since the 2nd, lots of masses, various testimonies that have been broadcast live, and there's even a final vows that are being professed in one of the convents today. So lots of great ways to celebrate this amazing St. Clair who lived her whole holy life in the wonderful town of Assisi, Glen.
Oh, thank you so much for that beautiful update and a jam-packed one, no less, today, too. Enjoy, stay safe, and all those good things, and we look forward to our next update. Ashley Nerona from Rome this morning here as Morning Air continues. Around the corner, we'll talk with Kim Morgan about the joys of Latin Mass, a new story corner on the way, too, all coming up as we continue with more of Morning Air here on Relevant Radio and on the Relevant Radio app.
Get connected to the conversation. Call us now at 888-914-9149. That's 888-914-9149. You're listening to Morning Air with John Morales on Relevant Radio and the Relevant Radio app.
Glenn in for vacationing John Morales today as we continue with Morning Air. Coming up in the next hour, is there such a thing as a perfect morning routine for success? Dave Duran certainly believes so. We'll check in with him. Plus a look at priestly celibacy with Father Marcel Tyone. But now it's been in the spotlight. Well, it certainly is if you attend one on a regular basis. But since the motu proprio from Pope Francis a couple of weeks back, talking about the Latin Mass in our next segment with our guest Kim Morgan, Catholic wife and mom of many. She's a prolific radio personality, co-hosting a show and joining us regularly here on Morning Air, as well as being a licensed independent clinical social worker. And from that mom and wife experience, we call on a lot of her personal family experiences and that good insight on a variety of things as well. Kim Morgan joining us from St. Louis this morning. Kim, great to have you along.
Good morning. It's good to be along with you today, Glenn. Thank you.
You know, we so much talk about the Latin Mass and the fuss about that in the last few weeks here with the motu proprio from Pope Francis, and we've tried to enlighten folks into what the Pope wrote and what that means and what it doesn't mean as well. But today we just want to focus a little bit on the joys and what has drawn people to Latin Mass. As a lifelong Catholic, that's something for you that has been more recent on the horizon. Growing up, was that something that you ever had much experience with?
Well, it's very interesting you ask that question right out of the gate, because no, I didn't even think as a child that it was, quote, allowed or done anymore. Until my husband and I took a military tour to Guam as part of our active duty orders with the Navy, I'd never even seen a Latin Mass. And only on Guam, it was very, very limited, the one or two times that I had been to a Latin Mass, and I was kind of surprised that it was still even being done. I was so in the dark about a lot of the history of our faith and a lot of the different ways that Mass could be celebrated. And fast forward to now we seem to be attending Latin Mass very regularly. And that's been an interesting change that just kind of developed all of a sudden for the Morgan household.
I know for me, my first experience was, wow, this is definitely in a different language. I mean, one could appreciate the reverence and the tradition and the smells and bells, as we say, right? But I imagine it takes a little bit getting used to, despite the great beauty involved.
It does. And, of course, Latin Mass in and of itself is not just about the Mass being in Latin, although those are the words we use to describe it. It's very rich in the traditions of the church that are very focused upon in the Latin Mass. And I'd like to maybe spend a couple minutes talking about that, because I think a lot of that is what is attracting people back to Latin Mass or towards Latin Mass. And back to seems like an odd phrase too, because it has always been in one way or the other part of our Catholic heritage and part of a way to express ourselves in worship on Sundays. But the traditional Catholic Mass has some traditions that are very much focused upon, like being at the foot of the cross. Like everybody says, well, you know, the priest's back is to us. Well, actually, the priest is facing towards the crucifix, towards the sacrifice. And it kind of directs everyone's attention in a certain particular way. So we're not distracted by maybe who's coming in late and wearing what clothes and whether the music's on tune or not that week. But we're really focused on that sacrifice at Calvary. But in addition to that, there are other parts of the tradition that come into play, like one of them I kind of mentioned is how we dress, and many traditional Latin Mass attendees, the women, will wear veils. And, of course, you can spend several hours talking about what the veil represents and the tradition behind that, but it helps, I think, each of us individually to focus on what we're doing, to prepare ourselves very purposely. So we may or may not have a chance to read the gospel before we leave the house, or maybe the night before, but that kind of physical, prayerful act of preparing ourselves by placing a veil on our head, by picking out proper attire, being there early to Mass, to pray ahead of time, is a very interesting and beautiful ritual that is not required. But you notice when you're getting in there 5 minutes late that everybody's already there and seated in it. looks like they've been a little settled for a while. And some of these traditions have really helped, I think, our kids focus on what they're doing at Mass, and that it's not just a box to check off. Okay, well, I did my obligation. I went to Mass. But they really feel drawn to it. They see the fullness of the Mass played out in the traditional Latin Mass rituals. And some of that really surprised me because I didn't think the kids would take to it quite like that.
As we're talking with Kim Morgan today about the good stuff, about the Latin Mass, it seems anecdotally from stories from friends and some of my limited experience as well, too, that Latin Mass seems to appeal, maybe surprisingly, to a lot of young families as well. What was it like to get the kids involved?
Well, the kids, I was the last one in the door, I think. The kids were the ones that really took to it, and they wanted to get a missal of their own so they could follow along with the readings that were being read in Latin, with the prayers that were being said in Latin, and they could follow along in the English. And I do have to say, it's so eloquent. It's so beautiful. It's so substantive than some of the readings we get with our more contemporary missals today. So they've really enjoyed reading and following along. And the other thing is that some of what's said in Latin Mass is done in English also. So they do hear the gospel. They do hear the homily. Of course, many of us know the responses because we've been saying the Agnus Dei and the Sanctus for many, many years within our Novus Ordo Masses as well. So there's this part of it that it doesn't seem so unusual. It doesn't seem quite so foreign. And the other interesting thing is I think Latin Mass kind of equalizes all of us when we sit in the pews. And what I mean by that is not everyone that is Catholic is educated enough to read or to follow along or to understand what's happening. Well, when you go to Latin Mass, especially for the first few times, you have no idea, really, some of what's happening. And you don't have to. You don't need to know everything. That priest is representing us, literally representing us at the altar for the sacrifice of the Mass. And he brings all of us in the pews with him. And we obediently sit there and we focus on what is happening and we pray in our hearts, and we're not distracted by many things that sometimes could distract us, and we're actually fully there and present, and we're basically relying on the priest in some respects, right? That he's saying these prayers and that we believe that we are worshiping the living God by knowing he's there and present in the sacrifice of the Eucharist. And I think that's interesting because then it doesn't matter how smart you are, how much education, or how much you've traveled, or which priest you know, or who you've bumped into in your life's journey. Everyone's equal right then and there for those few minutes. And that's kind of the way I think God sees us then. He doesn't see any particular person as being less important than anybody else. He has seen each of us in our unique abilities and talents. But when we're at church, we are all kind of coming to him as sinners. And I just found it kind of cool that I didn't have to know what was being said all the time because nobody did. That priest was there representing us. And yet the kids don't see that as something to be a downward or something negative about going to Mass. I think they actually see it as positive as well. And, of course, they have enjoyed learning and following along some of the Latin as well.
Latin, the great equalizer there. Kim, I've talked with some friends who regularly attend, and they find a great peace in kind of not necessarily being conscious of all the words that are being said, but kind of a great peace in that environment.
It's certainly worth going to. I will say that because I was a little bit hesitant. I thought we were just going to kind of explore and see it, and then we'd be back at our regular parish, or we'd be back at the cathedral, and we had lots of other great choices in the St. Louis area for masses, but this one just kind of stuck. It stuck with my husband. It stuck with the kids. And as we journeyed on, I realized that I was concerned it may kind of separate us from either our older kids or our younger kids, or maybe I wouldn't get all on board. And it actually brought all of us together, including older kids who were, now married, starting their own lives and looking for a parish to be at. They found the Latin Mass to also have that sense of reverence and that sense of joy. And, you know, the other thing is that we can never discount is Mass does have a sense of community, maybe not during worship while everything is going on, but after Mass, we have time to talk with each other. We have time to plan events and do things together so that our Catholic faith should be the center of our lives every day and not just on Sundays. And those types of communities that you can be involved with then can continue the gospel for the other 6 days of the week in our vocations in life, in our jobs as parents, in activities we plan for our communities, in witness we bear publicly by creating processions or festivals or whatever we might deem would be something good and holy and you know, downright fun to do with our church communities. So it's not that you give up some of that. You gain so much more sometimes when you find the right church, and when I think everyone should at least go to Latin Mass, especially now that it's been a little tedious here, knowing if every diocese is going to keep their Latin Masses or not, and it's something to treasure and to behold and to experience. And I think a lot of people might be surprised at. Here's one other really awesome thing about surprises in the Latin Mass: big families are there, and those big families, kids, they're well behaved. They mind themselves. They can sit through the whole Mass, and the babies still get taken out. They still squawk and cry, but there's just a beautiful joy of family life also within the traditional Latin Masses.
Well, I heard they cry in Latin too, and that's quite beautiful. But Kim Morgan, thank you so much for your insight into the Latin Mass, and may we all, if we attend, take some of that reverence back to the Novus Ordo as well. Kim Morgan joining us, thank you so much. We continue with Morning Air right now, shifting gears for a look and a listen at today's Story Corner. Our story today called Staying Young. I live in an apartment complex that has a bunch of little kids. During the original lockdowns, I'd go outside to walk around and get out. And one day, one of the kids launched a soccer ball in my direction. And without thinking, I headed the ball back to them. And they said something like, "Whoa, do it again, do it again." I was hesitant at first because I'm a bald 31-year-old with a large beard playing with a bunch of little kids. I told them, "I'm not sure if your parents would want you playing with a stranger, but you guys have fun." I didn't realize their mom was sitting inside with the window open, watching them. And I hear her yell, "Please kick the ball around with them if you want to. I know you live across the hall and I see you all the time." So I proceeded to play soccer with them for about 2 hours and had an absolute blast. Now every Friday, without fail, a group of kids knock on my door at 6 p.m. because they know I'm off work and want me to play some kind of game with them. We played freeze tag last Friday. I cheated and climbed a tree so they couldn't get me. It makes me feel like a kid again, and it truly is a highlight to my week. And that mom, also, she brings me fresh homemade tamales at least every 2 weeks and refuses to let me pay for them. From Matthew 18, 1-5, at that time the disciples came to Jesus saying, "Who is the greatest in the kingdom of heaven?" And calling to him a child, he put him in the midst of them and said, "Truly I say to you, unless you turn and become like children, you'll never enter the kingdom of heaven. Whoever humbles himself like this child is the greatest in the kingdom of heaven. Whoever receives one such child in my name receives me."